Breaking news on a breakdown in the infrastructure lane. John Berman here in for Anderson. Weeks of talks aimed at getting a bipartisan deal on infrastructure have ended. President Biden pulled the plug on negotiations with a GOP group led by West Virginia Senator Shelley Moore Capito. The focus now shifts to another group led by West Virginia Democrat Joe Manchin, because it's not just country roads after all. A live report shortly. First, though, a different kind of legislative dysfunction, this one in the face of an ongoing threat to democracy. It has to do with not seeing the true nature of its first violent chapter, which is one thing, and refusing to even look, which is another. And when the full history of the January 6th insurrection is written, the words of the man who incited it from the highest office in the land for week after week, right through the moment it began, will figure prominently into the account. How could they not? Well, here's how. Look through today's Senate report on the attack, and you will find plenty of new and frankly damning details. Security failures, unheeded intelligence, miscommunication, inadequate police training. In short, the two Senate committees that wrote it do a good job of laying out the mechanics of what went wrong and why on and around the day itself. But make no mistake, these things are important to know, but it's by no means all there is to know. What you will not find is much on what made it happen. You also won't see, at least not until the second of two appendices in the last 26 pages of the report, the former president's speech at his so-called Stop the Steal rally that day. Nor is there any examination of how his words and so many others motivated the mob, which they clearly did in real time.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol.
Yes.
Invade the Capitol building.
That video compiled by the organization Just Security showing the former president's call synced up with the mob's response. Not many dots to connect, but today's report connects none of them, which is a problem to at least one Republican.
It is important to know root cause of anything, period.
That's Senator Bill Cassidy, Republican of Louisiana. But as important as he considers knowing the origins of the insurrection to be, the Senate committee members who put this report together either did not or could not. One committee staffer told CNN, quote, "Did we look at Trump's role in the attack?" The answer is no. What's more, the word insurrection is nowhere to be found in the report outside of quotes and footnotes. Sources tell us that using it would have meant losing Republican support. Not that there's any great GOP enthusiasm for looking any further into the subject. Still, once upon a time, Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell could see the attack for what it was and had no qualms about identifying the perp.
People who stormed this building believed they were acting on the wishes and instructions of their president. And having that belief was a foreseeable consequence of the growing crescendo of false statements, conspiracy theories, and reckless hyperbole, which the defeated president kept shouting into the largest megaphone on planet Earth.
So no, he did not say insurrection, and no, he did not vote to convict and remove the president from office, but he also had no hesitation about identifying the culprit or the political sickness at play. Today, not so much, and especially not an outside commission to conduct the definitive probe.
Today's report is one of the many reasons I'm confident in the ability of existing investigations to uncover all actionable facts about the events of January 6th. I'll continue to support these efforts over any that seek to politicize the process.
Keeping them honest, though, isn't handcuffing two Senate committees and forcing them, reportedly in the name of bipartisanship, to neuter their report, politicizing the process? Isn't fighting a January 6th commission also politicizing the process because you don't want bad headlines during a midterm campaign? And whatever it is, doesn't the broader effort to just sweep it down the memory hole do a profound disservice to people like Capitol Police Sergeant Aquilino Gunnell? His hand was sliced open during the insurrection. He was soaked with chemical spray. He endured hand-to-hand combat so intense, he says there were moments he thought he might die. The sergeant also draws a straight line between the former president and the terror he faced.
When the president tweeted this or that, and they continue to say, well, he don't mean that. Well, this is not what he meant to say. That, take his word for it. Well, his tweet speak for itself. Well, he was just joking. Okay, how are these people who are deranged that listen to every single thing that he commands? If he tells them this, the sky is blue and there's a storm outside, they believe that crap? I mean, when is it going to stop? Is it going to take your own family to be murdered by these people? This time is against this president. Next time might be you.
And those words, next time it might be you, say so much. Because as we said at the top, the threat to democracy did not end when the sun came up on January 7th. The big lie lives on. Even now, attempts are still underway at overturning results from the last election. And some of the world's leading experts on how democracies die are warning loudly that silence about the last attempt to destroy it here makes the next attempt more likely to succeed. Joining us now, Senator Tim Kaine, Democrat of Virginia and a member of the Armed Services and Foreign Relations Committee. Senator, thank you so much for being with us. I want to know what you make of this report and the fact that it did not consider the role of the former president in the events of January 6th.
John, this report was a report about symptoms, but not about causes. And so it was narrow from the start. On the symptoms, they did a very good job. They were charged with looking at what the Capitol security did or did not do on January 6th and how we need to correct it. So the shocking and saddening thing about it when I read it was the leadership of the Capitol Police really let down, even betrayed the Capitol Police members who worked so hard to protect senators and staffers and House members at cost of their own physical security. So we learned some things from the report about how Capitol security should change, but it was not an analysis of root causes. It was it was symptoms, not causes. And that's why we need to look deeper. And sadly, the Republicans want to bury their heads in the sand, but the Democrats who control both have.
CNN's reporting that in order to have bipartisan agreement on this report, on just the symptoms, the word insurrection had to be excluded. It was in quotes and in footnotes, but they couldn't make it part of the report. I mean, what does that tell you? Why would Democrats ever agree to that?
Well, I'm not on the two committees in the Senate who worked on this. And remember, Department of Justice was not part of this. DHS was not part of this. The House was not part of this. But I give my two Democratic committee chairs, Amy Klobuchar, Terry Peters, Homeland Security, Government Affairs, I give them great credit because they needed to bring everybody along. But it was a very, very narrow report. It was a report on how do we need to plan for Capitol Police and others to secure the building. This was not a report about how to secure the democracy. It was just a report about how to secure the building.
I got you.
How to secure the democracy squarely on the shoulders of House and the Senate. And we can't let it stop here. We've got so much more to do.
Well, but how's it going to get done, right? I mean, the Republicans just blocked a bipartisan commission, right? So if you're only going to look at the symptoms, who's going to look at the causes? How do you think that's going to happen?
Well, I you've heard what we'll see is when the Republicans blocked the bipartisan commission and how far we've fallen since 2001, the attack on the Capitol in 2001, the parties joined together to analyze why there was an attack and what we could do to stop it. The Republicans have decided they don't want to help stop the next one. That means that the adults in the rooms are the Democrats. and we've got to do it. And I think that means either in the Senate or House or both, Democrats have to use our majorities in the key committees to look at root causes. The president's perpetuation of the lie, who were his aides in perpetuating the lie, including some in our own chamber, media organizations and others. And I'm confident that Democrats, having been rebuffed in a bipartisan version, we will set up a Democrats-led version with people involved who will establish independent bona fides that the American public can trust the outcome of our study.
Very quickly, because I'm a little concerned about losing the connection right now, the bipartisan talks between the White House and Shelley Moore Capito, Republican of West Virginia, broke down on infrastructure today. How discouraging do you find that? And do you feel that without getting rid of the filibuster and without Republicans coming on board on key things, how imperiled is President Biden's agenda?
You know, John, I'll give you the punchline first. I don't think it's imperiled because Democrats are motivated to move forward. We want to do bipartisan if we can. If we talk to Republicans, they give us good ideas so that we can come up with, say, an infrastructure bill that will serve all 50 states. But if at the end of the day they don't want to participate, we're going to move forward using tools at our disposal, reconciliation, regulatory processes that the administration can invoke. And we're going to do things that matter to everyday people in every zip code in all 50 states. And if the Republicans decide they don't want to engage, we're going to move forward anyway with tools at our disposal.
Senator Tim Kaine from Virginia, thanks so much for being with us.
So glad to be with you, John. Thanks.
Just ahead, we're going to keep the conversation focused on Capitol Hill and those breakdown and negotiations over President Biden's infrastructure package. We'll have a live report from the Capitol, plus one Democratic senator who says she's ready to move on from the whole bipartisan approach. And later, the latest on Vice President Harris, her first international trip just a day before the president's own, what she said in Mexico and how she responded to critics about a possible border visit. Now to the breaking news we mentioned at the top of the broadcast. Key pieces of President Biden's agenda stalled the day before he leaves on his first overseas trip. Negotiations over an infrastructure package have collapsed. Two voting rights bills are being held up, and now some Democrats appear ready to throw aside the president's preferred bipartisan approach. Ryan Nobles joins us now live from Capitol Hill. Ryan, so what's going on right now with the infrastructure negotiations?
Well, they haven't completely abandoned the idea of some sort of a bipartisan approach, John. Instead, they've redirected that focus. And right now, in the bowels of the Capitol, in a small room underneath the Senate chamber, a bipartisan group of legislators are meeting right now with the hope of at some point coming up with some sort of plan they can bring back to the White House and President Biden that he can support and that they can then bring to the Senate floor. The problem is right now, we have no idea what they've agreed to, even how much money they're willing to spend, or even what the definition of infrastructure is. And that's been a big problem in these negotiations, is that Democrats and Republicans seem so far apart on these kind of basic tenets as it relates to these negotiations. But they're going to give it a go. The president backing away from his conversations with Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia and has instead said that he wants this bipartisan group made up of lawmakers like Joe Manchin, Kyrsten Sinema, Mitt Romney, Susan Collins, and others to come up with some sort of a deal. At this point, John, though, we don't know how long that's going to take. And there are some Democrats that are getting nervous.
Well, on that point, it seems like the non-Joe Manchin, Kyrsten Sinema Democrats are getting not just nervous, Ryan, but also frustrated. What are you hearing?
Yeah, they're ready to walk away from the table, frankly, John. Many of them suggested that they shouldn't even deal with Republicans to begin with, that they have the option of going through reconciliation, which means they can pass this bill with only 51 votes, and that's the route they should take. However, they ran into problems because folks like Manchin and Sinema have said that they refuse to vote for a deal that doesn't have some sort of Republican support. And this is the danger zone that President Biden finds himself in, this narrow room for negotiation. If he ends up endorsing a bill that too many Republicans support, he could end up losing progressive votes. And not just on the Senate side. Of course, this bill would have to go back and be passed in the House. And the margins there are also very, very tight. And if 10, 15 Democrats on the progressive side of the ledger don't vote for it in the House, then the whole deal falls apart. So this is a very tenuous situation for the White House and for Democrats here in the Senate and the House. And that's why you're seeing them having such a hard time getting this legislation over the finish line.
And it's even more difficult with the president. president leaving for a week, going overseas. Ryan Nobles, thank you very much for that. Just a short time ago, I spoke to one of those Democrats we mentioned ready for her party to go it alone on the president's agenda, Hawaii's Mazie Hirono. Senator, even before the talks broke down between President Biden and Senator Capito, you said you were ready to move on from bipartisanship. What did you mean?
Meaning that I completely believe Mitch McConnell when he says that his goal is to make sure that President Biden doesn't achieve any of his major goals, one of which would be these bills, the infrastructure bill, et cetera. Although I have to say that perhaps on infrastructure there can be some sort of a bipartisan agreement. Perhaps.
Although, how do you feel about the fact that the talks between Senator Capito and the president didn't get to the finish line?
Well, apparently there are other people having these kinds of talks, so it's not over yet for some kind of a bipartisan infrastructure bill to emerge.
So just to be clear, the Capito talks did break down, but there is another group of senators, bipartisan group, still meeting. You do not think that's a waste of time? You still hold out some hope?
Well, this is a new group of senators, so perhaps, but I'm saying that I am prepared already that we should go ahead using reconciliation for the two bills, the Build Back Better bills. But, you know, if other people aren't there yet, I think the time is running out where we say, we Democrats say, okay, that's enough. It's
you say
Fisher
we,
cut bait time.
You say we Democrats. Yes. And you mentioned Mitch McConnell, but you have a problem with some Democrats, which is that Senator Joe Manchin, I don't think, is ready to move on.
I think Joe may be part of this group that is having these further discussions.
Beyond infrastructure, you know that certainly on non-financial bills, you need 60 votes to get anything passed.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
Don't you, by definition, need bipartisanship?
We have 50-50, and Vice President Harris breaks the tie. But we certainly need to have at least 50 in order to get things passed using reconciliation.
Using reconciliation, but on bills
yes.
that aren't subject to reconciliation, police reform, voting rights, and others.
Yes,
those
you're
are still.
Need 60.
How are you going to get them? How are you going to get them without bipartisanship?
You have to get rid of the filibuster, which I am also ready to do.
I was talking to progressive Democratic Congressman Jamal Bowman yesterday about Joe Manchin's opposition to the voting rights bill, also Joe Manchin's opposition to getting rid of the filibuster. And he told me that Joe Manchin has become the new Mitch McConnell. Do you think that's fair?
I'm not going to start calling my colleague names. I was more than disappointed in Joe's position on S1, but at the same time, I think that we might be able to get some of the provisions in S1 through, provided that Joe tells us what he is concerned about regarding this 800-page bill.
Let me just ask you, in general, broadly speaking, President Biden, a Democrat, is trying to get an agenda through. Do you believe that if he continues to push for bipartisanship, that that agenda is in jeopardy?
Yes. I mean, as I said, I believe Mitch McConnell when he says that his goal is to make sure that Joe Biden doesn't accomplish his major goals so that Mitch McConnell can take back the Senate. I believe him when he says that. And so while we can get bipartisan support on some discrete bills, such as the COVID-19 hate crimes bill that we pass in a bipartisan way on some of the big agenda items, I believe Mitch when he says that he's not going to participate. At the same time, if Mitch McConnell were to say tomorrow that we're going to work with Democrats to get the infrastructure bill through, that we're going to get the American Families Act through, then we can get it done. But he won't go there. And therefore, I think that we should move to reconciliation to get these kinds of agenda items through. The people of our country need it, want it, are hoping for it.
Senator Mazie Hirono, thank you so much for joining us.
Aloha.
Breaking news next. After getting defensive this morning about visiting the southern border, what the vice president just said on the subject tonight. It is Vice President Harris's first overseas trip in office. And tonight, after hitting a snag on the politically loaded domestic side of it, she's doing some damage control while suggesting it's not damage control. So the breaking news tonight from Mexico City, the vice president is now saying she will visit the southern border soon. Her announcement follows a notably prickly interview this morning with NBC's Lester Holt.
Okay. Do you have any plans to visit the border?
At some point, you know, we are going to the border. We've been to the border. So this whole thing about the border, we've been to the border. We've been to the border.
You haven't been to the border.
I haven't been to Europe. And I don't understand the point that you're making.
So now she says she is going, but also telling reporters, quote, I think it's short-sighted to suggest we're only going to respond to the reaction as opposed to addressing the cause. Joining us now, CNN chief political correspondent and anchor of State of the Union, Dana Bash. So, look, the vice president is walking a tightrope on this issue of visiting the border, and you heard her response to NBC's Lester Holt. Our friend David Axelrod suggested earlier he was surprised she wasn't better prepared for the question. What do you think of that?
Well, instead of telling you what I think, I'll tell you what I'm hearing in my reporting from people in the administration, John, and that is a lot of people scratching their heads. You can kind of hear it over the phone in my conversations, perplexed that the vice president wasn't more prepared for that question, because it has been the hammer that keeps coming down on her from conservative media. And perhaps this is some speculation from people I'm talking to. That's why she kind of got her back up, because they are conservatives trying to tie her to the border because they think it is politically, negative for her. But that doesn't answer the question as to why, because of that, because it has been so transparent, so clear that that is happening. Not that Lester was asking a question from the right, but it is in some ways a legitimate question. If you are going down to start this new idea that you have, this new directive that you have from the president with the Northern Triangle countries, the root cause, it is a legitimate question to say, well, at some point, are you going to go to the border? And she wasn't ready. It wasn't until the third time she was asked about it today by our Jeremy Dimon that she answered, and the answer was yes.
So this is interesting to me, Dana. You're talking to people within the administration who say they're scratching their heads, they're concerned. I mean, how successful do they think this trip is going so far, and what would make it successful?
Well, it depends on how you define success. I mean, first and foremost, it has to be about the policy. Because if the vice president can have these negotiations and these talks and do things in the short term, like reopen the places where people who are seeking exile can go in these countries, as opposed to at the U.S.-Mexico border, as occurred during the Obama administration, that's one small success. But she has been, in a very strategic way, defining success as very, very long term, something that might ultimately happen after the Biden administration is done, because it has to do with, basically corruption in a lot of these countries. Another way to define success is how Kamala Harris, the politician, the vice president of the United States, performs on the world stage. And so far, the reviews have been mixed. And again, this isn't my job to give her a review. Mm-hmm. This is based on some talks that I've had with people in the broadly in the administration and certainly in the Democratic Party.
Again, reviews you are hearing from inside the administration itself and Democratic leaders, which is interesting. And it's not to suggest that the actual trip, which is designed to deal with the Northern Triangle, that those issues aren't real and important.
And
it may be that doing that, you also have to do some of the other things as well as the politics. Dana Bash, interesting reporting. We're going to have a lot to talk about tomorrow morning.
I'll see you tomorrow morning, Berman.
See you tomorrow morning. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. Next, what former President Obama told Anderson about the storm clouds gathering over our democracy, and my conversation with one of his former top advisors. If it's true that appetite grows with the eating, then the appetite in some corners of the Republican Party for tampering with democracy bears watching. Speaking with Anderson in a special airing last night, in this hour, former President Obama admitted that our experiment in self-government is not, in his words, self-executing. It doesn't happen just automatically. Here's more of their conversation.
You write about Sarah Palin, about her brief ascendancy, right, and you talk about dark spirits that had long been lurking on the edges of the Republican Party coming center stage. Did you ever think it would get this dark?
No.
I thought that there were enough guardrails institutionally that even after Trump was elected, that you would have the so-called Republican establishment who would say, okay, you know, it's a problem if the White House doesn't seem to be concerned about Russian meddling, or it's a problem if we have a president who's saying that, you know, neo-Nazis marching in Charlottesville, they're good people on both sides. You know, that's a little bit beyond the pale. And the degree to which we did not see that Republican establishment say, hold on, time out, that's not acceptable, that's not who we are, but rather be cowed into accepting it, and then finally culminating in January 6th, where what originally was, oh, don't worry, this isn't going anywhere, we're just letting Trump and others vent, and then suddenly you now have large portions of an elected Congress going along with the falsehood that there were problems with the election.
And the leadership of the GOP, briefly for a, you know, one night when they still had the sort of scent of fear in them, you know, going against the president.
And then, poof, suddenly everybody was back in line. Now, the reason for that is because the base believed it. The base believed it because this had been told to them not just by the president, but by the media that they watch. And nobody stood up and said, stop. This is enough. This is not true.
Joining us now, Valerie Jarrett, former senior advisor to President Obama and author of Finding My Voice, When the Perfect Plan Crumbles, The Adventure Begins. So, Valerie, after the part of the interview we just played, Anderson went on to ask the former president how in his book he wrote, quote, our democracy seems to be teetering on the brink of a crisis. And that was written before the January 6th insurrection. And he also calls the Republican Party unrecognizable compared to when he was in office. I wonder what you think. You were in the trenches during those 8 years. Has the Republican Party become unrecognizable to you?
Completely unrecognizable, and I would think unrecognizable to much of our country. I think the point President Obama made was a good one, which is that we can't just rely on our democracy existing without doing anything to protect it. And when people put their short-term political interests ahead of what's best for our country, John, chaos ensues. And if this were happening anywhere else in the world, the United States would normally be the ones to point their finger and say, no, that's not a democracy. You can't condone an insurrection. You can't pretend that an election wasn't fair when it's been certified by everybody, including the vice president of the United States. And so when that starts to happen and short-term political interests trump what's good for our country, a crisis ensues.
So the former president essentially said, when you look at this embrace of the big lie by many in the Republican Party and using that lie to restrict people's ability to vote, he's worried about democracy. You know, I wonder how you think.
I can interrupt you to say we have 47 states in our country that are trying to pass laws to restrict the Americans' right to vote. Mm-hmm. That is anti-democratic.
How do you think all of this, January 6th and what we're seeing now, has affected how he is approaching his post-presidency? What is it compared to what he thought it would be?
Well, now that's a very good question. I'm sure he didn't think he was going to have to be speaking out regularly in defense of our democracy. He thought those guardrails would hold. That doesn't mean that you wouldn't see political maneuvering. Certainly you did while he was in office. We saw leaders such as Mitch McConnell say his number one priority was to make sure Barack Obama didn't get reelected. But we didn't see anything to the degree that we are. So I think post-presidency, what he's focusing on and what he mentioned to Anderson Cooper gives him hope as the next generation of leaders. And his mission is to try to help train that next generation to prepare them for the challenges that lie ahead.
Well, I want to ask you about the next generation here, because the former president talked about his two daughters, Sasha and Malia, and how they responded during many of the Black Lives Matter protests after the killing of George Floyd. Listen to this.
In terms of them having a good sense of what's right and wrong and their part and role to play in making the country better, I don't worry about that. They have both a clear sense of that I see in this generation that what you and I might have tolerated as, yeah, that's sort of how things are, their attitude is why? Let's change it. And that's among not just my daughters, but it's among their white friends, right? There's this sense of, well, of course it's not acceptable for a criminal justice system to be tainted by racism. Of course you can't discriminate against somebody because of their sexual orientation, right? There are things they take for granted that I want them to take for granted. But what I find interesting is they're also starting to be very strategic, about how to engage the system and change it. They're not just interested in making noise. They're interested in what works.
So when his daughters say, let's change it, and they're trying to make changes, he says, do you think that possibly could be public office in the future?
Oh, my goodness. I don't think that's what he was talking about at all. I think he was talking about the kind of activism we saw last summer all across our country, people of all races, all backgrounds, fighting for a just and fair system of policing, and that his daughters felt the need to get involved and let their voices be heard as well, together with countless other young people who are outraged by what's going on in our country. And they're not just going to raise their voices, mm-hmm. they're going to vote. And we saw a record number of young people vote, which is part of why you're seeing so many Republican legislatures trying to change the laws. They want to suppress the vote of young people. They want to suppress the vote of people of color because they recognize that our country is moving in a different direction. And the good thing is that the young people have the strong legs for a hard race and a strategic race, as President Obama said.
Yeah, I have 14-year-old twins, and I tell them all the time, I'm counting on you. You're the ones who have to fix this. Valerie Jarrett, thanks so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, John.
Just ahead, a rare interview with a Republican state legislator trying to bring Arizona's so-called audit to his home state of Pennsylvania, and who tries to argue that our elections are less secure than those in Afghanistan. Our Gary Tuchman has the facts and the interview when we continue. One of the more high-profile leaders of the big lie can sometimes be a little camera shy. Pennsylvania State Senator Doug Mastriano wrote bogus allegations of election fraud to a national profile. He's now openly contemplating a run for governor. But when he and other state Republicans were in Arizona last week touring the much-maligned recount, or audit as they call it, they want to emulate in Pennsylvania, they ran from CNN and local reporters. According to our Kyung Law, reporters tried all morning to have a few words. All morning, the Republicans avoided them. Well, perseverance in the form of our Gary Tuchman caught up to Mastriano and some of his followers in Pennsylvania over the weekend.
A rally at the Pennsylvania State Capitol.
And, you know, we were oppressed this past year by lies and deceit.
Pennsylvania State Senator Doug Mastriano was telling his supporters why he believes there needs to be an election audit in his home state, much the same as the so-called audit that he visited, which is still taking place in Arizona, run by a small, little-known cybersecurity firm called Cyber Ninjas. Mastriano was also making a startling comparison.
There are better elections in Iraq when we are there occupying the country. There are better elections in Afghanistan when we are there in the country.
How does this audience have your back?
Mastriano had only done interviews about his Arizona experience with advocates, but he agreed to talk with us, and his supporters were by his side.
All I want to know is what happened.
Let me ask you this, though. This is one thing you didn't mention. You know
yes.
That dozens of judges and courts around the country have ruled against Trump's voting claims, and a lot of them are Trump-appointed judges, and even the U.S. Supreme Court.
Okay.
Is there a higher authority than the courts?
Well, yes, it is the people.
Do you think the people are above the courts?
So,
this is the country of law.
Supreme Court.
You know that Donald Trump expected the Supreme Court.
Where do we derive the power, the government?
From the people.
So you're saying the people are above the courts?
The people.
You guys at this rally are above the courts.
I'd be careful with twisting. That's a bit partisan there. You just made an assertion.
You tell me what you said.
So what I'm saying here.
is that I work in a judiciary, I'm sorry, not legislative branch. You got me a little flustered. So I'm a senator, and I work for the people of my district, obviously, the 33rd District of Pennsylvania. And about 40-some percent, the number is as high as 47, but about 40% or so, you know, had concerns about the outcome of the election. And so what are we supposed to do, stand aside or ask for an audit?
Despite no evidence of widespread voter fraud, CNN polling does show 46% of voters across the country believe rules are not strict enough to prevent illegal votes from being cast. But there have already been two audits in Maricopa County, Arizona, performed by two companies certified by the Independent U.S. Election Assistance Commission. And they found ballots were counted accurately.
This is Cyber Ninjas, a Florida group that's never gone elected before. Are you? Would you like Democrats to come here with the Cyber Ninjas and overturn your vote?
You're afraid of transparency.
I'm not afraid of nothing.
You're terrified. He's afraid.
Are you afraid of Democrats coming here?
He's afraid of a proper forensic. And I wonder, what are we afraid of here?
The truth. The truth.
Why didn't the Democrats ask for it?
It was really heartbreaking.
There have been two
really heartbreaking. I mentioned in my speech, I've seen better elections in Afghanistan.
You really think that?
Yes.
Okay.
You and I have both been in Afghanistan.
Why do I say that? So in Afghanistan,
they have the lawyer Jergo,
in Afghanistan, they have to go in with an ID card. In Pennsylvania, no IDs are.
Afghanistan does have ID requirements. It also has a long history of devastating election violence. In its 2019 presidential election, 85 people were killed and 373 wounded during election-related attacks, according to the UN.
I don't know why you're afraid of a full transparency. I think it's time to... Why not?
Why not?
We never have corruption. You're afraid of the truth.
Oh, are we done?
The senator left. We are done. Gary Tuchman, CNN, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
Our thanks to Gary for that. I'm joined now by Pennsylvania Attorney General Josh Shapiro. Mr. Attorney General, your reaction to Senator Mastriano and the sort of the performance art performed there with Gary Tuchman.
Well, let's speak some truth here. I think that was not evident before. There are no legitimate lingering questions from the 2020 election. And let's also speak some truth. There have been two audits done here in Pennsylvania by law. I heard the word transparency thrown around quite a bit a moment ago. You know what transparency would be? Not lying to your constituents and not denying the simple facts that we had a safe and secure and free and fair election here in Pennsylvania. So the question isn't why do another audit? I actually think the question is why are so many leading figures in the Republican Party, particularly here in Pennsylvania, so focused and captured by the big lie? You know, we are 7 months after the last election, and they're doing that bidding for Donald Trump instead of doing the work on behalf of the good people of Pennsylvania who deserve their services. And look, it is part of a broader pattern. You can draw a straight line between all of the litigation that I batted back before the votes were cast and when they tried to stop votes from being counted to the dangerous rhetoric that led to the violent insurrection in our Capitol on January 6th, to all of the efforts in state capitals across the country, including in Harrisburg, to try and make it harder for people to vote in the next election. I'm not going to buy into that. I'm going to continue to stand on the side of the people of Pennsylvania and on the side of truth.
You asked a question. You said you should ask, why are they doing it? Why do you think they're doing it?
Well, because I think they're doing the bidding of Donald Trump. And Donald Trump controls the modern day Republican Party. They work for him, not the people of Pennsylvania. They do the work for him, not the needs of the people all across this Commonwealth who are struggling, the people who need a job, the kids who need a better education. They're focused on serving Donald Trump, not serving the good people of Pennsylvania.
What do you make of the argument that he stated, and we hear it around the country, well, there are X percentage of people who are questioning the outcome of the last election, as if that idea weren't repeated again and again and again and again by the likes of Donald Trump or Senator Mastriano. It's sort of a circular argument.
Exactly circular. Look, they have questions because of the lies that the senator and former President Trump and others have fed them. And let's speak some truth here. They keep talking about an audit. There were two audits done here in Pennsylvania one by law in nearly every single county in the Commonwealth, and another one where they sampled 2,000 ballots in every single county across this Commonwealth. Those audits showed that we had a safe and secure election.
You know, he wasn't the only state lawmaker to go to Arizona to observe the audit. There were also state lawmakers from Georgia, Alaska, and other places. What do you think when these Republicans make this pilgrimage to look at what the cyber ninjas are doing there?
I think they're speaking to an audience of one. They're so desperate for Donald Trump's support. They're so desperate to get his statements of support. They recognize that in order for them to win their primary elections, they can't do it without Donald Trump. But I think, unfortunately for them, what they don't appreciate is that having that blessing of support from Donald Trump may help you win a primary, but it's probably going to also cost you a general.
Attorney General Shapiro, thanks so much for joining us.
Good to be
Coming
with
up,
you.
The rude greeting the president of France got on a trip that was supposed to highlight the upcoming easing of COVID-19 restrictions. Details next. The president of France expected a simple visit to southeast France to meet with restaurant owners and highlight tomorrow's easing of COVID-19 restrictions. It turned out to be anything but. This video posted on social media shows a man reaching out and slapping President Emmanuel Macron. The incident took only a second or two before French security police rushed in. A spokesman for the Élysée Palace said a man tried to hit the president and said Macron then continued on with his tour. Authorities said the man who struck the president along with another man were placed into custody. Still scary to see something like that. The news continues, so let's hand it over to Chris for Cuomo Primetime. Turn the other cheek. He'll sign up for Cuomo training. You too.
Now streaming exclusively on Max, a new CNN flash doc about the album that has Nashville talking, Call Me Country, Beyonce and Nashville's Renaissance. Watch it at max.com/callmecountry. Max subscription required.